The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
I thought the earth was heating up like a foreman grill. I thought the poles were melting like a fondue pot. I was a green. I hated SUVs. I used to cringe when cows would cut the cheese. Then I checked the facts. Now I'm a denier.
Now I'm a denier. The tune of the Monkees, I'm a Believer fame. I'm of the Monkees era, so that song appealed to me when I found it online last week, and I decided I'm going to make that the theme song for the show for now. We'll be playing it going in and out of commercials today so you can hear more of it. That is from the M4GW Players. Imagine that's for M4 Global Warming Players. It is a spoof, of course, and sometimes it takes humor. And with all the access to great media online, audio, video clips, we're going to start using more of that going forward as Progressive Radio Network goes forward. That's one commitment I'm making for 2012. I was happy to be in the PRN studios in New York last week with Matt and Jake and meeting all other sorts of wonderful people from PRN, and it was really fun. And we talked about all the changes that are being made that are going to make PRN not only a lot more popular and well-known out there, but also what we can do to make this show even more lively. It certainly is timely. I hope you appreciate that. Those of you who listen know that we get the latest, greatest green news on with the most important people to interview on the subjects. Just a couple weeks ago, was proud to have the producers of the new Thrive movie on. That movie came out 11/11/11 and getting great reviews. And just out about 1 month now is the latest wonderful creative brilliance from Annie Leonard, and that is The Story of Broke. I am thrilled to have Annie on. She's been on the calendar for about 2 months. That's how busy she's been promoting her new video and traveling around the world and speaking at conferences. She is one of my sheroes, right up there with Roz Savage. So thrilled to have Annie on. We'll be saying hello in just a second. And in the last section of the show, we'll be talking with another new hero of mine, Brad Friedman, and his sidekick, Desi Doyen. They do the Brad blog, of course, as well as the Green News Report, and anyone who does Green News is a friend of mine, and we'll be talking to them in terms of what's going on politically, and lots of good stuff from Brad and Desi in the last 20 minutes. But first, I want to welcome to the Green Front Annie Leonard.
Thank you. It is so good to finally be here.
It is great to finally have you on, and even better to watch The Story of Broke. I have an idea for your next video, but we can get to that in a couple of minutes. The Story of Broke is really timely. I mean, my goodness, with Occupy Wall Street, with all this talk about, you know, the economy and jobs, but not enough about the ecology. Of course, our ecology is also breaking. Our home, our ecosystem, our planet is dying from neglect, and not intentional neglect or damage, but certainly the longer we ignore these pressing ecological challenges, not the least of which is climate change, the great exacerbator, the longer it's going to take to dig out from this. And your videos are just fabulous, really legendary, because they take very complex issues like what's going on with our environment, with stuff originally, with our economy right now, and make it not only, you know, clear, you connect the dots, but you make it fun, you make it funny. How do you do it, Annie?
Well, you know, I realize that we need to make it fun and we need to make it accessible, which is not the same thing as dumbing it down. I feel like people are really ready for a serious conversation. The mounting evidence about the state of the planet, as well as the state of our economy and broader society and public health, I mean, it's so clear there's so many things wrong. People don't need to, we don't need to soften that with people, like they know that. But we need to figure out a way to talk about this. I've been working on these issues for about 25 years now, and I am really a technical wonk in terms of this stuff. I love all the charts and graphs and, you know, super detailed books. And for many years, I thought the way that I would win over people is by becoming more and more of an expertise, like really perfecting my understanding of the scientific language and the charts. And I would wave my charts around and be so curious why people were not only joining, but they no longer invited me to parties and stuff. And I realized
I know the feeling. People don't want to hear it.
I'm sure you do. But a lot of environmentalists are trapped in this myth that the truth will set us free. And I say it as a myth because if it were true, we would be free. We have so much truth about the state of the planet. And what I realized is that the way we were talking about it was getting in the way. And we needed to figure out a way to talk about these really serious issues that's not about guilt and fear and gloom and doom, even though the data is scary, but that's engaging and accessible and inviting so that more people will want to join the conversation.
Absolutely, and that's why, if you heard the theme song, the new one, hot off the press, theme song, I mean, you got to use humor. We have to laugh because we spend enough time crying, those of us who actually take this stuff to heart. And there's plenty of us, but not enough. So good for you. And you have touched people around the world. How many people do you figure have seen your videos altogether?
Well, I made the first film, The Story of Stuff, which anyone can watch and download free online at storyofstuff.org. I was hoping to get 50,000 views. That was my goal. I thought if we get 50,000 views, we'll really turn up the volume on this much-needed conversation. And to my amazement, we got 50,000 views in one day. And we are now at over 15 million views on the main Story of Stuff. And about 20 million views if you count all of the films, which are all available on the website, in every country in the world. It is just fascinating to see the incredible resonance the message had and the excitement that we're hearing from people who watch it who want to get involved.
Okay, so first it was the story of stuff, then the story of cosmetics, the story of bottled water, and now the story of broke. Are there any I'm missing?
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch. So we did first the story of stuff, and then, which is still the main one, that's 20 minutes. All the other ones are about 7 minutes. We did the story of cap and trade, which is especially relevant now.
Oh, yes. How could I forget?
Durban COP is going on. Story of cap and trade looked at the shortcomings of what was being promoted as the main solution for climate, which is really not a solution. The story of bottled water, which looks at manufactured demand, how companies got us to pay 2,000 times as much for a drink of water than we could get for pennies from the kitchen sink. Story of cosmetics, which looks at the prevalence of toxic chemicals in consumer products, especially personal care products. The story of electronics, which looks at planned obsolescence. Why our electronics are not only loaded with toxic chemicals, but designed for the dump. They are so hard to upgrade, to repair, to recycle. If one little piece of them breaks, we've got to chuck the whole thing and buy a new one. And then after we did those, we decided to change tax a little because we could make story of lousy product indefinitely since there are an indefinite number of them. We decided to take the conversation a little deeper and look at some of the underlying drivers of these problems. So we did the story of Citizens United v. FEC, which is a cumbersome title but important for people to learn. That is the Supreme Court case which said that corporations have their campaign donations are protected under the First Amendment. So corporations basically have unlimited freedom of speech in the terms of money. So it basically gave away our democracy as an auction. And, you know, if we are going to solve any of these environmental or other problems, we have got to get corporations out of our democracy and people back in. And then the most recent one just came out last month, which you mentioned, is the story of broke. The subtitle is Why There Actually Is Enough Money to Build a Better Future. And we made this film because we get hundreds of emails a day, and I travel around the country giving talks about how we actually can have a clean, safe, healthy, fair, sustainable, and fun society. We can make products without toxic chemicals. We can have economic policies where we share things better. We can have a healthy environment. It's absolutely, totally possible. And I always get people raise their hands and say, yes, but we're broke. You know, clean energy sounds nice, but yes, it's too expensive. Recycling sounds nice, too expensive. We can't afford that. And I just got so fed up with this incredibly effective PR campaign that the right is pushing, saying that we're broke. The truth is we are not broke. As Van Jones says, we're not broke. We've been robbed. We are not broke. There's plenty of money. It's our money, and it is being diverted to prop up the dinosaur economy. So at the same time that we're told we can't afford public transit, we can't afford decent schools, we can't afford clean energy, we're giving $10 billion a year to record profit-making oil companies. We're bankrolling and backing up nuclear reactors, garbage incinerators, building infrastructure for Walmart and big box stores. At the same time that one part of our government says no money to build a better future, the other part of our government is handing out checks and tax breaks to really obsolete industries that we need to be moving away from.
What is wrong with this picture? Here's a quick clip from The Story of Broke.
So why is there always enough money for the dinosaur economy, from big oil to bailouts for big banks? But when it comes to building a better future, we're supposedly broke. Maybe it's because these guys know how to ask for it. Their lobbyists and giant campaign contributions let our government know what they want and what they'll do if they don't get it. But you know who has the real power? We do. What if we got as protective of our tax dollars as we are with the rest of our money? What if we told our government what we want and what we'll do if we don't get it, starting with voting them out? Forget broke. We could start building a better future right now.
That is a little clip from the story of Broke. Again, you really tie so much together, kind of like Thrive. I don't know if you've seen that documentary yet, but they do it in 2.5 hours. You do it in how many minutes? And you have some great help from Free Range Studios. I think they're your illustrators there, because as amazing as you are, and you are, I read your book, it's hard to do all that alone.
Free Range Studios is more than just our illustrator. They are really our core creative and strategic partner in all of the films. The original story of Stuff was actually based on a live lecture that I gave, and I gave it hundreds of times over about 4 years, to the point where I just thought, I cannot give this talk again. And every time I would give the talk, someone would ask me if I had a film of it. And I kept saying, no one's going to watch a film of me talking about where our stuff comes from and where it goes. But when so many people asked me, I finally said, okay, I had a friend of mine film me giving the talk. We went to Free Range Studios and said, how might someone capture this talk on film and then share it around the world for free? And they were amazing. They've done lots of other stuff. So if you want a little entertainment, go to Free Range Studios online. They've done amazing online flash and other kinds of animated films about all kinds of environmental and social issues. And they're really just genius storytellers.
And lucky for us, they're based here in the Bay Area in Berkeley, your hometown, of course. So that makes it convenient.
Yep, they also have an office in Washington, D.C., but the folks I work with are here in the East Bay.
And, of course, that's how An Inconvenient Truth got started. Al Gore was giving his slideshow, and Lori David saw it and said, let's turn this into a movie. And he was very reluctant, I think incredulous at first, and said, who would want to watch, you know, the slideshow? And we know how many people that reached around the planet. Didn't quite wake everybody up, not yet anyway, but it did certainly, you know, it was a milestone in terms of awareness on climate change. You would never know it looking at the Republican presidential candidates. In fact, you probably noticed that John Huntsman is now the latest one to take back his concerns about climate change, doing a little flip-flop there. But if you'd like to comment, feel free. Otherwise, we're going to be focusing on that a little bit more in the second half of the show. It's quite remarkable, though, isn't it? Let's just take a moment to comment on the political scene, how this has become a litmus test for, you know, Republican contenders to have to say they not only don't believe or they're not sure about climate change being real, but they don't think we should be spending any money because it's going to hurt the economy. Here we go.
It's so stunning that, you know, I usually talk a lot, but I almost feel speechless about this. I mean, it's just so stunning, the commitment to denialism, and to the point of just filtering out massive, massive amounts of scientific evidence, and not just scientific evidence, but sort of gut instincts. I mean, when I travel around, I ask people, does it seem like the weather's changing? Every place I go, there are stories. I was in South Africa this summer, and they said that the mango trees had blossomed too early, and so the particular kind of bird that they relied on wasn't there yet. I was in Canada, and they said there's a certain kind of beetle that eats wood, but the population is kept in check each winter because it gets so cold that most of them die, but they didn't die this last winter because it didn't get cold enough. I mean, it is everywhere you go. There is both at the sort of anecdotal, gut, real-world level, as well as just really mounting, absolutely solid scientific evidence. So you have to be really committed to fantasy to ignore this at this point.
I'm a denier. And we have this, you know, climate talks going on in Durban, South Africa. Not one member of Congress has traveled there to those UN talks. And there is yet a video coming from our favorite guy, James Inhofe of Oklahoma, Senate Environment and Public Works Committee ranking member. He recorded a video that he sent to the delegates there today to say, quote, I'm happy to bring you the good news about the complete collapse of the global warming movement and the failure of the Kyoto process. He goes on to say, for the past decade, I have been the leader in the U.S. Senate standing up against global warming alarmism and cap and trade, which would have been the largest tax increase in American history. You got to check it out. We're going to play it in the second half. I want to get some comment from Brad Friedman of Brad Blog, but feel free to weigh in here, Annie, if you have regained your ability to speak. And I know what you mean about being loquacious and some of these developments just taking our breath away, if not our words.
Well, tell you the part that makes me the most sad. I've traveled internationally for about 25 years doing this work on international environmental issues. And 25 years ago, or even 10 years ago, when I traveled, people liked us and people wanted to hear stories about the United States. And generally, when I said I was from the United States, generally I was greeted with a really positive warmth. And they didn't always like our foreign policies or stuff, but they really had a strong sense of affection for our country. And when I've been listening to some of the live radio broadcasts from Durban and checking in over Skype with some friends there, you know, we're really losing that role in the world, and we are increasingly being seen as a real pariah. I heard the daughter of Wangari Maathai on the radio this morning, and she was talking about the United States, and she said, either play well or get out. Like, either we need to cooperate with the rest of the world that is increasingly ready for action, or get out of the way. But the obstructionist role that we are playing in trying to find a solution, it's criminal, and I'm not going to be surprised if people start to take more seriously these discussions about taking some of these U.S. representatives to the International Criminal Court, because we are blocking progress on the most serious environmental crisis. Not only blocking, but like extremely blocking progress on the most serious environmental crisis. And, you know, we're not the ones that are going to bear the immediate impact. There are island countries that are going to absolutely disappear. There was some interviews this morning on the radio with some leaders from some of these island countries, and they said really it is sort of an existential crisis of existence for them at this point. I mean, the entire countries are going to absolutely disappear. The president of the Maldives has been going around Australia and other places looking for land to purchase to move his entire country. You know, Africa, even the United Nations estimates that 80% of African farmers will lose their ability to grow food because of climate change. I mean, this really is life and death issues, and we are going to see millions and millions and millions of people die, literally die, and it's not going to start here in the United States, which allows us to ignore it much, much longer than is ethically or morally tolerable. It is really a disgrace at this point.
You mentioned the president of the Maldives. I regret I can't remember his name, but I had him on the same day that Danny Kennedy of Longevity had overseen installation of solar panels on the president's residence, and he said, the president, you know, wake up, America, what is wrong? You know, I said, if there was some message you could send to us, and he was just like, come on, guys. It was almost like that. And yet we've got James Inhofe. I just have a couple more quotes. I have to just get this all out because it's unbelievable. He went on, this is a message he personally sent to the Durban delegates today. This victory of no one except me talking about global warming, that's the victory he's talking about, is especially important as the families in America and around the world continue to face tough economic times. Tossing out any remote possibility of a UN global warming treaty is one of the most important things we can do for the economy. Annie, what do we do?
You know, what I feel like is there are a certain number of people, I call them the unreachables. They are either allergic to science or so ideologically blinded that they are unwilling to accept it or something. They are the unreachables. We do not have the time to try to reach each one of them and convince them to change. The vast majority of people on the planet, they want a healthy environment. The vast majority of people on the planet want strict regulations so that the toys they buy their children and the food they bring home and the products that they're washing their hair with and everything else are not full of toxic chemicals. Most people actually want a healthy environment and a fair economy. So one thing is, I think we need to just forget the unreachables. We will be here forever until all the continents are underwater if we keep trying to reach them. Let's forget them and let's work with the folks who share our concerns but don't know what to do. One thing about the story of stuff that fed my hope and made me realize what was needed is that we got over 200,000 emails from people all over the world, especially in the United States, but literally all over the world, where people said, I agree, but what can I do? And so I feel like, in a way, this story of stuff took the temperature of the public and found that there are millions and millions of people out there who share our concerns, but we've forgotten how to make change. We're not sure what to do about it. So rather than trying to convince unreachables, let's connect with the reachables. Let's talk to the great swath of the American public who realizes that we are on a wrong trajectory here and help figure out how to move that concern into action, because there are more of us than there are of the deniers. So if we can move from being frustrated and concerned and feeling in our gut that something is wrong to being active, engaged citizens, we can turn things around.
I agree. And yet, let's look at the reality. It seems that this movement, if they're out there, we're out there, and I believe absolutely we are, they are, it's not muscular enough. It's not coalesced enough. I say that because look at the lack of legislation that we've seen, and many representatives who did go to bat. We do have some, you know, wonderful legislators like Henry Waxman, Ed Markey, who are trying to lead the way, and we saw climate change legislation die, you know, several times in Congress in the last year or two, just at a time, you know, in the wake of all these weather disasters where you think it would be a no-brainer, because they felt that they perhaps didn't have the constituency behind them, or it wasn't as expressed, and maybe President Obama has been less aggressive than we'd like because he hasn't really felt it. What can we do to, you know, build a coalition that lets our leaders know all the way in Washington, not only do we want this, we demand it, and we're only going to vote for leaders who understand our complex green issues. And I started the Green Tea Party to say, let no one who doesn't understand green issues anywhere near the White House. You know, we need to make sure that environmental issues is part of the agenda, and yet not one of the Republican debates has had a debate, you know, expressly devoted to energy and environmental issues, and there's barely been a question about it other than a passing mention of nuclear and natural gas, right, of course.
Well, what we need to do is sort of dust off what I call our citizen muscle. I feel like if you look at the history of the United States, there are lots of times that concerned citizens got together, worked collectively to make major change. And over the last, you know, 20 or 30 years, there's been a sort of a decrease of political engagement, especially among environmentalists. So the way that a lot of people express their concern for the environment now is recycling and sending in a check to some Washington, D.C. environmental organization. Now, as much as I love a lot of those Washington, D.C. environmental organizations, I think they made a really big mistake on the climate issue, is they played an insider game. They thought they could play an inside the beltway, deal with the congressional people directly, provide scientific expertise, you know, and negotiate around the table with big coal and work something out. And what they failed to do was to engage the majority of the American people on this issue. And so even though this is going to sound slow and it's going to take a long time, what we need to do is make these issues part of our daily conversations. When you're in line at the grocery store, start talking to the person next to you. When you're, you know, talk to the cashier. When you're picking up your kids from school, talk to the other parents. We need to start turning up the volume on this conversation. Remembering that a lot of people are intimidated to talk about environmental stuff because it's technical or they feel guilty because they have an iPod. We really need to move away from that sort of scorny, guilty, you know, fear-based discourse that has just simply not worked at mobilizing people, and talk about all the potential solutions, all the potential ways that we could make our economy better, our schools better, our environment better, our health better. I mean, there are so many solutions to be had by taking action on climate change. Get people to then dust off their old citizen muscle that hasn't been used in years, write letters to the editor, write letters to your congressperson. Even better than writing letters to your congressperson, when they come home to their district, ask a question in public. I asked a congressional aide that was a good friend of mine in Washington, D.C., how the different kinds of communications from constituents matter. And, you know, petitions and postcards are the least. A letter, an individually written letter, is better. But they all told me by far the most significant way to have your voice heard is to find out when your representative is in your district, go to a public event, raise your hand, and ask about this question. I mean, ask about these environmental questions. We've got to just inject our concerns into the public discourse. And I know it's hard taking the time to write a letter to the editor when we are so busy, but we have simply got to shift the discourse in this country. And the only way to do that is start talking about the things we care about.
Could not agree more. And yet, while you mention talk, let's mention the media problem, and that is 95% of all talk radio is ultra-conservative, meaning dominated by Rush, Sean, Bill, was Glenn Beck, you know, and friends and company, and it's funded by the Koch brothers. And I've, you know, bumped up against this, what I'm calling green ceiling, meaning I've talked to, you know, the programmers at top syndicators, Clear Channel, Westwood One, and they're telling me that, you know, they just, there's no room for a green show because they've got 8-9 hours of conservative talk and it just wouldn't fit in. So I said, you mean to tell me because these blowhards who are, by the way, laughing all the way to the bank, let's see, Rush makes something like $56 million a year, I do this as a labor of love and have for 15 years. We can't get a green talk show on that just might make a difference in this country and this planet because they are dominating the airwaves, the public airwaves. What is up with that? A commercial airwaves, whatever. The airwaves that we all are supposed to have access to. And while there is a lot of great stuff online, the best of which is yours, and thank God yours is getting out there in a very proactive way around the world, my challenge with internet, even green radio on the internet, is it's self-selecting. It's the green people who go and listen. We need to be someplace on mainstream outlets, and I think that would have some impact. When you look at the opinion polls and it shows that concern about climate change is down, you look at what's out there, the dominance of Fox News, doesn't that play a role, don't you think? I do, and I bet you agree that that's part of the problem.
Oh, it's huge. You know, there's sort of an echo chamber that from the minute we wake up and turn on any kind of media device to throughout the entire day, we are just bombarded with the messages that reinforce the same consumerist, selfish, individualist values, you know, from morning until night. And you really do have to go out of your way to find the other voices. I think we need to attack this on two different levels. One is we do have to create our own media. And even though it is self-selective, and even though it is not available to everybody, because a lot of people don't have high-speed internet, we can be making podcasts and YouTube videos and things like that. Absolutely, we need to be doing that. You know, in these days, 10-year-olds know how to do that. It's amazing how electronically sophisticated today's kids are. So enroll your kids and help them make YouTube videos and podcasts. But we also need a mainstream media strategy. The bottom line with most of these mainstream medias is their revenue. And so they will listen to people. I mean, you look at Glenn Beck losing his show after he lost so many advertisers and there was so much public outrage because of his, you know, really racist and violent comments that he was making. So we need to organize like that. Let the television shows, let the radio shows know how important the issues are that we care about and how much we want to hear them. Write letters and say, I won't listen to what you have on now. I will listen if you have a green show. And thank goodness for shows like yours. Definitely we need to do whatever we can to support shows like this that do
thank you.
We just getting out there.
Thank you. We just need to get on a larger platform because as outrageous as Glenn Beck was, and thank goodness he's not polluting the airwaves, believe me, I've been on Hannity's show a half dozen times to spar with him, and they're just as bad. And, of course, Glenn Beck, you know, is responsible for Van Jones not being in the White House, so I'll never forgive him for that, of course. He's unforgivable. But there's real damage, real collateral damage. How exciting was it to see, you know, a green job czar, one of our own, you know, hailing from the Bay Area, the brilliant Van Jones, going to the White House. That was one of the most encouraging developments. And to have him step down because of the smear campaign and the echo chamber, we need an echo chamber.
Absolutely. You know, and unfortunately with people like Glenn Beck, it doesn't stop with just the smear campaigns, but it really leads to violence. I'm sure you remember the case two summers ago where the Oakland police pulled over a car that was acting erratically and a fellow in full body armor and with a trunk full of guns got out and had a big shootout with the police, and he said he was going to a number of progressive organizations in the Bay Area to shoot the people who worked there. I mean, think
the Tide Foundation.
Pulled over.
Yeah. The Tide Foundation and the Presidio was one of them. Yeah.
Exactly. And he said when the police asked him, where did you learn about these? He said, on the news. And Media Matters, which is an excellent organization that tracks this, calculated that how many times the Tides Foundation was mentioned on various so-called news programs, and it was dozens and dozens and dozens on Glenn Beck and zero on other things.
And
so
what about
really?
And the tragic shooting of Gabby Giffords. I mean, that seemed to have some genesis in some nutcase listening to this crap. And, you know, while I'm at it, every time I've been on Hannity's show, both television and radio, I get death threats. Death threats, hate mail, death wishes is really more accurate, you know. Miss Rosenberg, I wish you'd draw a warm bath and bleed to death, you liberal commie. You know, how dare you suggest humans are part of nature? You should die. This crap, and it's consistent, I'll say that. I don't know if it's the same person each time, you know, with multiple messages or they're all the same mentality, but it's scary. And before I started America's Green Tea Party, for those of us who are steamed that they're playing politics with our planet, I thought, my God, is this going to put my life on the line? And like you, I'm a mom, and it hasn't gotten big enough to be any threat at all. But, you know, just that we even have to think like that is crazy.
Right. We get a lot of those death threats and death wishes as well.
I'll bet
and,
you do.
Two things. One is we don't let it get to us because they are so vastly outnumbered by the incredibly positive responses we get. We get incredibly heartwarming letters and emails from, you know, children, adults, economic professors, religious leaders, all kinds of people who say that our films really have resonated with what they felt in their gut and given them hope. And so that helps us a lot, that, you know, it's less than 0.1% of the people are the hostile nutcases. And so I do, I sort of try to ignore them from that point, but it does make me sad about the state of political discourse in this country. If we have reached a state where we cannot stand up and say things could be better, that we're not doing well enough without being attacked, then that's a really dangerous trajectory for us as a democratic country. We need to be able to have the safe space to question policies that our government is taking, to question the priorities within our economy. And if we don't have that democratic space, then it's really bad news.
And let's say the positive side of the story to the Inhofe that I opened with is Barbara Boxer, of course, hailing from the great green Bay Area. And, of course, she runs that committee. She said she also videotaped a message to the Durban delegates, the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change convened in South Africa. She said she wanted to send a clear message that, quote, there are leaders in the U.S. Congress who understand the urgent threat facing the globe, and despite reports to the contrary, many members of Congress are committed to lessening the impacts of unchecked climate change. So that, of course, is the opposite side of the Inhofe imbecile comments. And wanted to say something about timing. You know, this all might be kind of comical, what's going on with the Republican contenders, you know, flip-flopping and denying climate change, Fox News, faux news, you know, mocking us as a bunch of tree huggers, if it were not for the fact that scientists, climate scientists, are telling us we have, you know, 5 to 10 years to turn this around. I say 5 to 10 because they've been saying that for about 5 years, that we had 10 years to turn this around. We are, you know, twiddling while home is burning, as I say. We don't have time for this.
Right, and you know what is so frustrating about this is that it would be so easy to start turning things around. You know, I was just at a conference of engineers, environmental engineers, and they were explaining that right now, with existing technology, we could reduce carbon emissions by 80% by 2050. I mean, there are so many things we could do, from changing how we make buildings, to changing how we make cars, to changing how we deal with our waste. I mean, there are just an infinite number of things that we could start implementing right now. Some would be hard and difficult and would take some getting used to. Some would actually make life better. You know, it's not all about sacrifice and misery. It's also about making life better. There are so many things we could do. So if this problem was intractable and there was no solution, you know, I could understand burying our head in the sand and pretending it doesn't exist. But there are so many things we could do. There is just no technological reason why we cannot get started right now.
And here's the other irony. All of them would create jobs and help the economy.
I know, it's so crazy. would help the economy, would create jobs, would improve our standing in the international community, and would help resolve this climate issue. You know, as Dave Brower said, there is no business on a dead planet. If we just continue to bury our heads in the sand, you know, if our leaders do, I should say, we are not, and just refuse to take action, we are not helping anyone, and certainly not helping business in the long run.
Okay, so here, let's do a Green Tea Party ticket. Annie Leonard for president. I'll be your vice president. Or maybe we can get Ed Begley to join us and just get the facts out there, you know, for a taste of reality.
Well, I think to lay the ground for a truly green president, what we need to do is just really sort of seed that conversation. You know, lots of people ask me, what can I buy differently to help solve this problem? And I say, look, the best thing you can do in the grocery store is talk to the other people. You know, start going to community events, engage the folks at your church, at your school, wherever you are. There are many, many opportunities every day to turn the volume up on this conversation, and that's what we need to do.
I've been doing house parties where I talk about 10 ways to green your routine, how to green your diet, your drive, your vote, and the last thing, green your home. And we talk about green cleaning products as a way to get rid of the toxic chemicals. But the other item on the list of 10 is how to green your mouth. And that is, you know, don't let what stays, you know, unlike Vegas, don't let what stays at this, but don't let what happens at this party, in this house party, stay here. Go out and be an ambassador. That's what people need to do. Everybody needs to speak out.
Right. You know, house parties are a great example of what we can do, because this is not, you know, about being an eco-martyr and, you know, wearing sandals all year round and eating cardboard-tasting veggie burgers and, you know, being miserable here. This is about engaging with our communities, building social fabric and friends and community. Actually getting involved in making the world better provides the very things that scientists and psychologists are figuring out make us most happy. You know, quality of our social relationships, having a sense of purpose or meaning in life, and working together with others toward shared goals. This stuff is actually more fun than working extra hours to spend your Saturday afternoons at the mall. So, you know, just, I'm sure all your listeners already are engaged in getting, you know, working for a better future. But I just want to remind us, as we recruit others, it's not about, you know, come join us eco-martyrs and we'll nag each other if you don't carry your bag to the store. It's about come join us warriors for a better future, and we'll just have way more fun at the same time.
Exactly. And people say to me sometimes, well, Betsy, I'm just not as passionate as you are. I say, you don't have to be, and you wouldn't want to be. Believe me, it's a blessing and a curse, this environmental illness. And I've had it as long as you've had. I started Trash Talk Minutes 15 years ago on KCBS Radio because I just couldn't stand all the waste, and so much of it seemed to be mindless. So we're really kind of cut from the same cloth. How come more Americans didn't get our green gene? Why do some of us lose sleep at night and others just don't seem to, you know, seem to think it's their concern? Any thoughts?
Well, I actually do think that a lot of people do care about this. I mean, the problem of, you know, the media being dominated by those who are not sharing these messages is a huge issue, you know, that we need to have environmental messages and not just integrated throughout mainstream media, but also through our education and other places. But I really do think that most people are on our side. Most people want a healthy environment. It's just they're not sure what to do about it. Now, this is a new realization. I used to think, oh, they just don't know. If they knew, they would get involved. And what I'm finding is that most people do know we're on a bad trajectory. I mean, really, you know, to not realize that we're on a bad trajectory at this point, you'd have to be living in a cave or working at Fox News.
Or watching
it. Increasingly obvious, you know, everything from you're concerned if the Thomas the Tank Engine that you bought for your kid for Christmas has toxics in it to the fact that you don't feel comfortable letting your kids play outside in front of the house even though you played outside, but we don't know our neighbors anymore. And I mean, it just goes on and on, socially, environmentally, economically. It's clear that things are not working.
Look at the weather. Look at the fact that newborns have, on average, 200 chemicals in their umbilical cords, meaning mothers have it in their breast milk. You know, that and the weather, to me, those two alone and everything in between should, you know, have us all up in arms and saying this is an emergency. And while I agree, I think many more people are concerned about this than you would think, it also doesn't feel like we're really dealing with the emergency as great as it is, you know, sort of on that scale. So I don't know what it will take, but I know that your films are certainly helping, and just so grateful for all that you do. And I have an idea for you for your next one. If you don't have one, well, you probably have the next five figured out already, but I would love to work with you on the story of media, because I really think this is a big, important missing piece. You and or Michael Moore, I think, really needs to look into, you know, people are shocked when they, first of all, when they learn that there's not one green talk show on commercial radio or television anywhere in this country, and I know that there isn't because mine was on Air America, and nothing has replaced it since Air America went bankrupt, and the only green show went, you know, faded into black, and I went into the red along with Air America, having funded that. But people are shocked about that. People are also shocked to hear that 95% of talk radio is, you know, hosted by conservatives. And I think we need to get that out there.
That is so depressing.
It's real. Believe me. Trust me, it's depressing, and it's expensive.
Yeah, and we need to keep supporting programs like yours. You know, you're providing such a valuable civil service here.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, you know, I have to tell you the honest to God truth. Progressive Radio Network doesn't charge me. I do my show as a volunteer. It's a nonprofit organization. But if it wasn't for the fact that I had scheduled you 2 months out, I might have quit doing this show, because it's hard to continue working for free when you don't have any other means of income. But I got to tell you, I'm so fired up, I don't think I can quit now. So thank you for being on my calendar. And I said, I'm not going to quit before Annie Leonard's on the show. And
oh, please,
I don't
quit. We definitely need you.
Thank
we
you.
We have a big party to raise money or something, but we got to keep you on the air.
Thank you. I'm going to hold you to that, because I just want I want listeners, and that will the rest will happen. I'm really bad at social media, really good at getting the best green people I know, and you are right there at the top of the list, Annie Leonard. I am so grateful to you for everything you do, and we have a mutual friend in John DeGraff, who's also been a wonderful contributor to this movement with Affluenza and the Happiness Project. I love that because that's really what this is about. Like you said, we need to connect as community and feel re-energize our sense of purpose and belonging. And gosh knows we could not, you know, there's plenty of fuel for that fire, right? Plenty of work.
That's why we're so lucky, is that the solutions we need to live more ecologically and to build the citizen power to get this country back on track are the same things that make us more happy. I mean, we are, that is so fortunate, because what if the things we needed to do were a bummer? I mean, we're so lucky that the things are actually
more fun. We just need
to
get the word out. Well, I'd love to work with you and, you know, in any possible way to get the word out, because people like you have inspired me and you keep me going. So God bless you.
Thank you so much. And check us out at storyofstuff.org.
Absolutely. Go forth and greenify.
Thank you.
Annie Leonard, The Story of Stuff, The Story of Cosmetics, The Story of Cap and Trade, and now The Story of Broke. Check it out online. She's brilliant. And share it with all your friends. And share thegreenfront.com with all your friends, as well as the Progressive Radio Network. When I come back, I'm going to be speaking with someone who does a great job at social media and networking, better than I. That's Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. They do the Green News Report. I'm going to be chatting with them about what's going on in this world of ours at this surreal green moment in time. Be right back.
I'm a denier. The world's not on fire. It's just a lie. It turns out global warming was just a Ponzi scheme.
Hi, I'm Senator Jim Inhofe, Republican senator from Oklahoma. Today I'm happy to bring you the good news about the complete collapse of the global warming movement and the failure of the Kyoto process as world leaders meet.